الحمد لله رب العالمين، الصلاة والسلام على سيد المرسلين وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. قال الله تعالى في كتابه المجيد بعد: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. أما آتاكم الرسول فخذوه وما نهاكم عنه فانتهوا. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentioned in a very well known verse on the Quran that take whatever the Messenger of Allah has given to you and stay away from whatever the Messenger of Allah prohibits you from or told you to stay away from. Okay? Bismillah, today I want to discuss in the light of this verse and many other verses of the Quran the authority and the correct meaning of Sunnah. That of course we know that the Sunnah is a source of the Sharia for us. Okay? And unfortunately there are many misunderstandings today regarding the Sunnah. And these misunderstandings are in various forms. The most extreme misunderstanding regarding this subject is on the level of kufr or disbelief, when some people reject the Sunnah altogether. So there are some people, even they exist in India, called Ahle Quran, the people who only follow the Quran. They say, we reject the Sunnah, we do not follow the Sunnah. They are kuffar. Okay? One of those people in the world today is, for example, the leader of Libya, Gaddafi. He has openly said, I only follow the Quran, we reject the Sunnah. The Sunnah is not authentic, I reject it, we do not follow the Sunnah. Even though many people and Dawah carriers went to him and tried to discuss with him, and he had many of them killed. Right? He rejected the Sunnah openly and many Dawah carriers wrote many books against him in the Muslim world. So first issue we need to understand is that the Sunnah is definitively, in a qat'i way we must understand, in a definite way, it is a source of revelation for us. Allah Azza wa Jalla has said in so many verses regarding this, not only the verse I quoted, He said, مَيِّتَ الرَّسُولُ فَقَدْ أَتَى اللَّهِ. He who obeys the Messenger has obeyed Allah. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَتِيُوا اللَّهِ وَأَتِيُوا الرَّسُولِ. O you who believe, obey Allah and His Messenger. وَمَا يَنْتِكُ عَنِ الْهَوَىٰ إِنْ هُوَ إِلَّا وَحْيٍ يُوهَىٰ. Nor does he speak from his own desire. He only speaks what is inspired to him or what is revealed to him. So Allah Azza wa Jal in the Qur'an itself, anybody who believes in the Qur'an has to believe in the Sunnah. Because the belief in the Qur'an means that you follow the meanings in the Qur'an. And to reject the Sunnah is a rejection of the Qur'an. Because it is a rejection of all those ayat which establish the authority of the Sunnah. That we must take the Sunnah as a source of guidance, just as we take the Qur'an. Both of them are the sources of guidance for us and revelation. So we have to first understand this point, that the Sunnah definitely is a source of Sharia. Now most of us of course accept that. Okay? Only the people who have totally deviated away from Islam and gone into disbelief, they have a problem with that. But most of the Muslims, of course, they understand that in a clear way. However, there are still some misunderstandings in the minds of the Muslims regarding the issue of Sunnah. One of those is that the Quran is the primary source and the Sunnah is secondary to that totally, meaning they relegate its authority. And they see that the Quran is only important, the Sunnah is like, somehow they view in their mind, it is less authentic or it is not there, we should not look at it. That is also a misunderstanding, okay? That yes, the Qur'an, of course, it has been compiled in a definitive way. It is known as mutawatir, okay? In a way which is impossible for there to be an error in that. But similarly, in the Sunnah, there are the mutawatir narrations, those narrations which are mutawatir, like the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, when he said that whosoever invents something and claims that I have said it, okay, and it is not true, he will be in the fire. This hadith is mutawatir. It is reported by multiple lines of transmission that it is impossible for there to be an error in that. Just as the Quran was compiled in the same way. Okay, and you have in the Sunnah other hadith which may not be mutawatir, but they are classified as sahih, as sound. Okay, and hasan, as acceptable. So, the Sunnah, yes, in its method of compilation, okay, there are some variances to the Quran, but still its authority is there. And we must look to it as a source of revelation. Now, this is from the point of view of authenticity. Then there is another perspective. There today are many confusions upon the meaning of the Sunnah Okay? And some people think that the fard comes from the Quran and any other hukum may come from the Sunnah. That is not true. Okay? Or that the haram and the halal is mentioned in the Quran and other details are mentioned in the Sunnah. That is not true. Okay? From the Quran and the Sunnah we get the different ahkam. Whether that is fard, obligation, that meaning what? Obligation means if you do it, you get reward. If you stay away from it, you are sinful. Like the obligatory salah, like the obligatory fasting and hajj and zakah and ruling by whatever Allah has revealed. Obedience to the parents in those areas where you are obliged to obey and so on. These are the fara'id, the obligation. Okay? And the muharramat, the prohibitions are those actions where if you do it, you are sinful. If you leave it, you are rewarded. Okay? Like eating pork, drinking alcohol, committing zina, or the actions that lead towards zina. Okay, engaging in riba, okay, supporting those who are enemies of Islam and attack other Muslims to fight another Muslim brother without a just reason from the Sharia, etc. These are the muharramat, the prohibitions. Then we have what is known as the nafila, or mustahab, or mandub, or sometimes also people call it sunnah here. And this is why there is a confusion. What is known as the recommended deeds. Those deeds that if you do it, you get rewards. If you don't do it, there is no sin. Okay? Like the recommended prayers. Salatul Tahajjud, Ishraq, and the other recommended prayers. These are examples of recommendation. The different du'as that we recite when we go into the toilet, when we come out of the toilet, when we wake up, when we go to sleep. These are recommended. We do it, we get rewards. If we don't do it, we're not sinful. So this is known as mandub. Now, there is a confusion here. We have to understand the term sunnah linguistically. The term sunnah, it means the path or the way. Okay? So that is why sometimes they may say, the sunnah of Allah is this. Some people use this term. Linguistically is the meaning. The sunnah meaning the way of Allah. The way that Allah has established order in the universe. Okay? Sometimes people use this term. The sunnah linguistically means that. However, when it comes to a juristic term, when it comes to the sciences of the Sharia, the Sunnah is used in different contexts by different type of ulama in different disciplines. So let us understand its meaning, then we will clarify it here further. To the ulama of Hadith, to the scholars of Hadith, meaning the ones like Imam Bukhari, Imam Muslim, Tirmidhi, okay, Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, the ulama of Hadith who compiled the narration, the term sunnah, they sometimes use it to mean hadith, to mean narration from the Prophet ﷺ, or about the action or the consent of the Prophet ﷺ. So, when we look and if we are reading a book about hadith, they will say, this is found in the sunnah. This means it is found in the hadith. That is the terminology they are using there. To the ulama of fiqh, to the ulama of jurisprudence. Jurisprudence means what? Meaning the law. Okay, the ulama who compiled the law, meaning like Abu Hanifa, Ash-Shafi, okay, the other scholars, Ibn Hazm, etc., who wrote volumes and volumes of fiqh, meaning jurisprudence, these are the laws of the Sharia. Sunnah, when they use the terminology sunnah, it means recommended. So if they say the two sunnah prayers before Fajr, it means the two recommended prayers. Okay? Or if they say the fast on Monday and Thursday is sunnah, it means it is recommended. Okay? Mandub, which means recommended, or mustahab, which means the same thing, or nafila, which means the similar thing. Sometimes all of these are used with the same context. Okay? Now, to the ulama of usulul fiqh, to the ulama of the foundations of jurisprudence, not to jurisprudence itself, to the foundations, meaning to the principles of how to understand the Sharia. Okay? What is known as usul al-fiqh. Usul meaning the principle or the foundation, and fiqh meaning jurisprudence. Okay? So the scholars who wrote, and many of the scholars in history wrote about this subject, and even when we look at this subject, for example, if you want to understand the types of evidences in Islam, we look to the books of Usul al-Fiqh, like a Risala of Shafi'i, Okay, like Al-Ihkam fi Usul Al-Ahkam of Amidi, like Al-Mustasfa of Ghazali, okay, like Irshad Al-Fuhul of Shawkani. These were the books of Usul al-Fiqh, the principles of jurisprudence, how to understand the law, basically. How do you understand the evidences, how do you outweigh the evidences, etc. When it is in reference to this, Sunnah means the source of Sharia. When they say, this is from the Sunnah, it means they look at Sunnah as a source of Sharia, and they talk about, when we look at the Sunnah, let us study it in from the point of view of the source of the Ahkam. Okay? So, sometimes we may get mixed up and confused by these different ways that the term Sunnah is used. So, we have to understand the term Sunnah in the correct context, with the correct meaning. Okay? Now, when we want to understand the Sunnah, and the most misunderstanding today is regarding the Ahkam Sharia. This is the subject that I will go into in more detail. Some people have weird understandings, strange understandings regarding the Sunnah as a source of Sharia. And they have a total confusion in this subject. For example, one brother recently in Delhi, it is a strange example, but it is true. Somebody came to his house and he offered them tea. He said, do you want some tea? And the brother said, no, it is haram, I cannot drink it. Why? Because the Prophet ﷺ did not drink tea. Okay, so this is an extreme understanding, which is a misunderstanding totally of the Sunnah. Okay, other people, they will say, look, why are you? How can you be talking about Islam? You are not dressed as the Prophet ﷺ was dressed. So they include the dress of the Prophet ﷺ as Sunnah from the point of view of not Sunnah in the sense of permissibility, because Sunnah can mean permissibility. We will go into that. Okay? Sunnah, they say, from the point of view of recommended, or sometimes even obligatory. Okay? Some people, they have a problem. I have read the books where they say, oh, today, look, we are in the modern world, we should reject that technology, because it's not from the Sunnah. The Prophet ﷺ did not drive a car. He did not get on a plane. He did not go on a train. He did not use a computer. He did not use a mobile phone. Therefore, we should reject it because it is not from the Sunnah. So, we must understand there is huge confusion, and how do we clarify this? How do we understand it in a proper way? Let us discuss this. Okay? Let us understand that we are worried today about the subject of the Sunnah from the point of view of Usulul Fiqh, from the point of view as a source for the Ahkam Sharia. Let me say a statement to you. You may become confused at first about that, but then I will clarify. Some people, they think we should follow everything that the Prophet ﷺ did. That is not true. The Prophet ﷺ did things and actions that if we were to do, we would commit haram. So the Sunnah, as a source of Sharia, can be haram. It can be fard, obligation. It can be recommended. It can be permissible. It depends on what is the hukam, i.e. what is the rule of Allah. Just because the Prophet did it doesn't mean automatically that there is a rule. We have to look for the rule. And that is what the scholars of jurisprudence do. They look for the rule. So let me give you an example. The Prophet ﷺ married more than four wives. For us it is prohibited. The Prophet ﷺ used to fast and never break his fast for 3 days. He used to fast after Maghrib without breaking it. This is haram for us. The Prophet ﷺ in his marriage, mahar was not obligatory. To give the mahar, the amount from the man, was not fard for the Prophet. Okay? So, the Prophet ﷺ, certain things were specific to him. Meaning not, we should not look automatically. The Prophet ﷺ did something automatically, means for us it is fard or recommended. We have to look, what is the hukam? What is the rule from that? Okay? The Prophet ﷺ may have done things which are permitted only. Not obligatory, not recommended. So let us look. So let us understand the types of Sunnah first. Okay? Then this picture will become clearer. The scholars have defined three categories when it comes to the Sunnah as a source of Sharia. Okay? One is qawli, the speech, the qawl of the Prophet ﷺ. One is fi'li, the action of the Prophet ﷺ, and the third is Takriri, the silence. The Takriri, the silence of the Prophet ﷺ. Meaning what? When we look at a sunnah from the point of view as a source of law, we look to the speech of the Prophet, the silence of the Prophet, and the actions of the Prophet. All of them are part of the sunnah, meaning we can gain an understanding of the revelation from those. Okay, so let us look. For example, the Prophet ﷺ said, إِنَّمَا الْأَعْمَالُ بِالنِّيَّةِ. Verily, actions are by intention. So this is from the holy, from the speech of the Prophet ﷺ. Okay? The Prophet ﷺ, when we look at his fi'l, his actions, the way he performed Hajj, we gain from that. Okay? The way he performed Salah, we get from his actions. Okay? Not only his sayings, you know the tartib of Salah, the ordering, that you do the Qiyam, the Rukud and the Sujood. This ordering of the Salah is from the actions of the Prophet ﷺ, not from his sayings. There is no hadith which specifies the tartib, the ordering of prayer exactly. There are hadith which talk about individual parts, like the Sujood and like different things, the Rukud. But they don't discuss the whole thing, that is from the action. There is no hadith meaning in terms of the speech of the Prophet. Okay, from his actions they are. So we must understand from these three, from the speech, from the action, and the silence. For example, the Prophet ﷺ approved of women praying in the masjid by at the back of the masjid. This is his silence, his consent towards the action. So it is from the sunnah as a source. Okay, so from when we look at the things, the actions, and the silence of the Prophet ﷺ, we can extract, or the scholars will extract the hukam, the sharia rules that we should follow. Whether it is farz, for example, like salah, the way the Prophet ﷺ used to pray. It may be something which is haram, like the Prophet ﷺ said to fast on the day of Eid, or the two times of Eid, Fitr and Adha, is haram. This is from the sunnah, it is not from the Quran. It is from the sunnah in terms of the holy part, the speech of the Prophet ﷺ. Or it can be from the mandub, the recommended, like fasting on Mondays and Thursdays. Okay? Or it can be makruh. Makruh means that if you do it, you are not sinful. If you stay away from it, you are rewarded. It means it is disliked. So like the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ about not eating garlic when you go to the masjid. Okay? It is known as makruh, meaning detestable or disliked. That if you do it, you are not sinful. If you do it, but if you stay away from it, it's better, meaning you will get reward. Okay? Or it could be mubah, permissible. Permissible means what? It means if you do it, there is no sin and there is no reward. Okay? So, for example, the Prophet ﷺ, it is narrated that he drank water while standing, meaning it is permissible. It is not haram. Okay? So, we must understand the Prophet ﷺ rode on a camel, so that is permissible, by definition. Okay? We cannot say just because the Prophet ﷺ rode on a camel, we must ride on a camel. You must have an evidence to say that riding on a camel is more than permissible. And there is no evidence. So therefore, it is simply permitted. To say that it is recommended, you need a dalil. You need an evidence that the Prophet ﷺ said, yes, this is recommended. If you do it, you will get reward. Or if you don't do it, you will be sinful. Something like that, to specify that it's fard. But if we don't have that, the minimum is that it is permissible. Okay? So now, how do we understand the actions of the Prophet ﷺ? And this is the area where people, a lot of times, have confusion. Because the speech of the Prophet ﷺ normally is explicit. The Prophet ﷺ will say about something. So for example, if the Prophet ﷺ said, "Tibab al-Muslim fusuq wa kitaluhum kufr," to accuse the Muslims is a transgression, and to fight him is disbelief. So if the Prophet ﷺ said that, that is quite explicit, that to fight a Muslim is haram, and to accuse a Muslim is haram. Because he has associated sin with both of them. He has said it is fusuq, which means transgression, and it is kufr, which means disbelief, which is even worse. So, both of those things are prohibited. So, this is from the speech of the Prophet ﷺ. Normally, from the speech of the Prophet ﷺ, people can see explicitly, in explicit terms, when he said, dua is mukhal ibadah, it is the brain of worship. So, we can see the Prophet ﷺ has praised dua to a high degree. So, it is a recommended thing. Okay? So, the speech of the Prophet ﷺ is one thing. Now, how do we understand the actions of the Prophet ﷺ? This is where people become confused, where there is no explicit statement. The Prophet ﷺ did not say, wear the same clothes that I wear. He did not say that. That is why people become confused now. Because if he had said it or not, if he had said it, then it would have been a clear matter. That, wear the same clothes that I wear, fine, we will wear it. Okay? But he did not say. They say from his actions, he wore it, therefore we should wear it. Okay? This is where it leads to a confusion. We must understand. When we look at the actions of the Prophet ﷺ, we, the scholars have subdivided them into different categories. The first part is those actions which are part of the Prophet's nature. They are part of his fitrah, his nature. The way that he acted. For example, it is narrated that when the Prophet ﷺ used to walk, when he wanted to turn, he would not, like we sometimes turn our head, then we turn our body. The Prophet ﷺ would not turn his head, then his body, he would turn his whole body. Okay? So it is narrated when the Prophet ﷺ used to walk, he used to look like he is running. Or he used to look like he is walking down a hill, meaning he walked quite fast. Okay? This is something part of his nature. When he used to get angry, he used to go red. Okay? Now, do we say, oh look, the Prophet ﷺ went red when he is angry, so if I am angry, I should try and make myself red? I am following the sunnah of the Prophet? No! Okay? It means that these things were part of his nature. They have no legislative consequence in terms of recommendation or obligation for us. What they simply show, the minimum, if the Prophet ﷺ did something, one of these things, is that it is permissible. So of course, the Prophet ﷺ walked fast, so for us it is permissible to walk fast. But to show that it is recommended, or more than permissible, we need another evidence. If there is no other evidence, it remains unpermissible. You understand? Also, for example, the Prophet ﷺ, if he mentioned something, or he did something, and then he specified something about that, then he could raise that hukam. So the Prophet ﷺ used to eat with the right hand. Okay? And one of the companions was going to eat with his left hand, and the Prophet ﷺ said, no, eat with the right hand. So now, there is a legislative impact. Okay? That it is recommended to eat with the right hand. Okay? Now, also, within this area, okay, of the Prophet ﷺ as a man in terms of his natural attributes, there is also an area about the issues of technology, okay, things which require technical knowledge or specialization, engineering, computers, etc. The Prophet ﷺ has clearly stated that these matters, okay, in these matters, he has not come to tell us how to build a computer. He has not come to tell us how to make a car. He has not come for these things. He has come to show us the revelation of right and wrong, of good and bad, and how to organize our life. But in the technological things, we are allowed to look into these things ourselves. Okay? So the Prophet ﷺ said in a famous hadith, when the companions, the Ansar, the people of Medina, they used to do a practice. They used to cross-pollinate the date palm. You know, in the date tree, the trees, to pollinate, to increase the yield, to increase, to get more dates. What they used to do, because you know how fruit grows, okay, that they need to be pollinated, like flowers. So they used to get one branch from one tree and hit it together with another tree. So the seeds from one go into the other, okay, or the pollen from one, sorry, goes into the other and it becomes pollinated and the yield will increase. So he thought, the Ansar, they were doing this thing. And he thought, he did not understand what they were doing in the reality. So he told them, why are you doing this? They understood from his words that he maybe meant that it was haram. So he stopped, they stopped doing that. The next year, the date yield had decreased in Medina. Meaning the amount of dates in the marketplace, they went down. And they came to the Prophet ﷺ and he asked them, why is this? And they said, well, you told us not to do this. And he said, no, I did not mean that. He said, in a famous hadith, you are more knowledgeable in your affairs of your dunya. Meaning the affairs of these technological things, you are more knowledgeable in those things. If you are an expert in medicine, you know about that. If you're an expert in technology, you know about that. Okay? Meaning, he did not mean it is prohibited here. He was simply asking what they were doing. In another example, when the Sahaba, their mentality is that they were careful to understand which issue is from strategy or technology and which issue is revelation in the sense of a fard or haram or makruh, mandub or mubah. Okay? So as an example, in the Battle of Badr, when the Prophet ﷺ mentions, maybe we should do this in the battle, the companions, they ask him, is this from revelation from Allah or is it a matter of opinion, war and strategy? Okay? And the Prophet ﷺ said, no, it is a question of opinion, war and strategy. Meaning what? It was not directly revealed from Allah that we have to fight the war in this way. It is an area which is optional, meaning permissible. So, then Abbad ibn Munzir suggested maybe we should take the wells of Badr and so on. And the Prophet ﷺ followed his suggestion. Okay, so we understand that when it comes to these matters, we have to look. We cannot say automatically that, oh, the Prophet ﷺ did not drive in a car, so therefore it is haram to drive in a car. That is not true. The Prophet ﷺ has shown us that it is permissible to travel. And Islam, from the general evidences, has allowed us the things, unless there is a prohibited type of thing. There is a principle in the science of jurisprudence, Al-Asal fil Ashya al-Ibaha, the principle related to things, meaning material objects, is that in origin they are permitted because Allah has created the world for our utilization. Apart from a very short list of prohibited things, we're not talking about action, things like pork, like dead meat, like alcohol, we cannot use those things. But when it comes to any other things, we can use that. The Prophet ﷺ used to send the Sahaba to Yemen to learn the art of making swords. In the Battle of Khandaq, he used the trench, which was from the Persians. In fact, it is narrated in authentic hadith. The Prophet ﷺ said, I love the clothes from Asham. And Asham at that time was part of the Roman Empire. They were not Muslims. Okay, he liked the clothes which were from Syria, Jordan and Palestine, this area. So we must understand that when the Prophet ﷺ did, which category did something, which category does it fall under? The second category within his actions is those actions limited specifically to the Prophet ﷺ, meaning they were restricted only for him. We cannot do them. And if we do them, we are sinful. I mentioned some of them earlier, okay? That the Prophet ﷺ, for example, for him, tahajjud was farz, an obligation, but we do not do it with the intention of farz. Okay, we do it with the intention of recommendation. For the Prophet, he had to pray every single day. He could not miss it. Okay, the Prophet ﷺ was allowed to marry more than four wives at one time. We cannot do that. Allah has told us in the Quran, marry once, twice, thrice or four times. That's it, at one time. The Prophet ﷺ, at one time, he had nine wives. Okay, so more than four. So it is not permissible for us to have more than four. This is an action what is known as khas, specific for the Prophet ﷺ, restricted for him. Okay, not for us. For example, another example, in the marriage, his marriage to Zainab bint Jahash, okay, radiallahu anha, his marriage to Zainab, that marriage was, that contract was performed by Allah. And the witnesses were the angels. The Prophet ﷺ, he walked into the house of Zainab without a mahram, without her having a mahram. And he said, Allah has married me to you. Okay? That is why Aisha radiallahu anha and the other wives of the Prophet ﷺ, they used to say that Zainab used to be very proud of that. She used to say that Allah has been the one who performed my contract of nikah, of marriage. Okay? Because it is mentioned in the Quran that Allah is the one who married. Okay? And we know that the Prophet ﷺ has told us that explicitly. So, this of course is something specific to him. We cannot move to Omar and say, Allah has married me to you. Okay? That is a specific thing. To him, we cannot do that. Right? That you have to have the contract of witnesses and so on, wali amr, so on. Okay? So this is what we know, the specific things for the Prophet ﷺ. So not automatically, just because the Prophet does something, it is not automatic for us. The third thing, this is the most important category, the actions of the Prophet ﷺ which carry a legislative impact, which carry a direct hukum shari'i for us. For example, the Prophet ﷺ said, pray as you see me pray. So when we pray, we follow the Prophet ﷺ. Also he said, emulate me in your rituals. Okay, so when we perform Hajj, we look at the Prophet ﷺ, how he performed it. This is a legislative impact, meaning when the Prophet ﷺ was doing a farz or a recommended thing, the way that he did it, the way he performed it, becomes for us the methodology of how to achieve that. Okay? So the way the Prophet ﷺ performed Hajj becomes the methodology for us to perform Hajj. Because Allah has told us to follow him, and it is known as ta'ati, emulation in the actions of the Messenger. So, if the Prophet ﷺ was doing something as a farz, like Hajj, we know already it is farz from the Kitab, from other evidences. So, if the Prophet ﷺ made tawaf a specific number of times, then we take that as an evidence that this is the number of times he made tawaf. If he made from Safa to Marwa, he ran, this is the number of times he ran. Similarly, in any farz that the Prophet ﷺ did, if he does a farz, the way that he did the farz, if it is repeated, if it is by repetition, the way he undertook that farz becomes farz in itself. Unless there is an evidence that is restricted to him only. For example, for Salatul Fajr, the Prophet ﷺ used to always read two surahs. Okay? Most of the time. Now and again, the Prophet ﷺ used to read another surah or different surah. And the Sahaba, they asked him, O Messenger of Allah, why do you change? He said, because if I continued, you would take it as a farz. Do we understand? That if the Prophet ﷺ was undertaking a farz in a particular way, in the same way, for us it becomes farz the way to achieve that. So if the Prophet ﷺ always prayed salah in the same way, in terms of the tarteeb, the ordering, that is definitely the ordering of prayer. Okay? You understand? We cannot say, I will make sujood first, then qiyam, then ruku, and mix it up. Okay? That is definitely the ordering of prayer. No scholar ever disputes that. The scholars may debate on the details, put your hand here or here. That is a different matter because there are varying narrations about the Prophet's actions in that area. But in this area, the ordering of prayer, it is definitive. Similarly now, the way the Prophet ﷺ engaged in ruling, okay, it becomes obligatory for us as Muslims to follow the way that he ruled, because ruling is already a part. Allah said, وَعَلِحْكُمْ بَيْنَهُمْ بِمَا أَنزَلَ اللَّهِ, and rule the people by whatever Allah has revealed. So to rule in Islam, to run a government, is an obligation, is a part, according to the laws of Allah. So the way the Prophet ﷺ ran the government in Medina as the head of state, it becomes obligatory for an Islamic state today. Of course today that one does not exist. But when it returns, to follow the same method of government, the same system of government that the Prophet ﷺ had. For example, some people try to say, no, the Prophet ﷺ did not have a form of government. That is nonsense. That contradicts all the books of Hadith and the books. Look at, if you look at Sahih Muslim, okay, you can go and find it, if you maybe you have it here. Look in there, there is a book, Kitabul Imara, the book of ruling. You can open it in the chapters, the Kitabul Iman, the book of Iman, okay, and then the different things. In there, there is the Kitabul Imara, the book of ruling. It mentions the Hadith. إِذَا بُغْيَةٍ خَلِيفَةٍ فَقْتُلُوا أَخِرُ مِنْهُمَا. If the pledge of allegiance is given to two rulers, two khulafa, kill the latter of them, meaning it's putting a rule of government, that you must only have one ruler, one khalifa. Okay, there is a hadith in the same book, Sahih Muslim, that قَالَتْ بَنُوا إِسْرَائِيلَ تَسُوسُهُمُ الْأَنْبِيَا, the children of Israel, their politics, their siyasa was looked after by the Anbiya, the Prophet. When one of them died, they were succeeded by another one. But after me, لا نبي بعدي, there is no Prophet after me. تَتَكُونُوا خُلَفَاءُ فَتَكْتُرُ, they will be khulafa and they will number many. And the Sahaba asked, what do you order us, O Messenger of Allah? He said, follow them, for Allah will question them. Give them the allegiance, give them the bayah, for Allah will question them for what they are responsible with. So we understand that in Islam, there is a method of government. The Prophet ﷺ, for example, just to give you some examples, he appointed Mu'adh ibn Jabal radiallahu anhu, Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, Ali ibn Abi Talib as judges to go to Yemen. And Mu'adh also as a governor, as a wali. He appointed, okay, other governors in different districts to rule over those areas on his behalf. Okay? And he gave them advice. He asked them, what will you rule by? When he said Mu'adh in the famous hadith, what will you rule by? He said, I will rule by the Kitab of Allah. And if you do not find the answer in there, I will look to the Sunnah of his messenger. And if you do not find the answer in there, he said, I will make ijtihad. I will derive from those two sources for the situation. And the Prophet ﷺ commended him and said, and called him the messenger of the messenger of Allah. Okay? The Prophet ﷺ had assistance in government. Assistant, you know, like today you are president, vice president, it's something like that, but different. The Prophet ﷺ said, my two wazirain, my two wazir in the Akhirah, okay, my assistants in the Akhirah are Mikael and Jibreel, the angels. My two wazirs in the dunya are Abu Bakr and Umar. Abu Bakr and Umar were the assistants of the Prophet ﷺ in government. Like you have something like a vice president, but it's different because they have more power. That they used to rule, they used to go around, they used to judge cases, they used to deal with issues. Okay? The Prophet ﷺ had governors, he had assistants, he had an army. He used to appoint the commanders of an army. Okay? And he used to appoint a command structure. We know in the battle, he said, okay, that Ja'far ibn Abi Talib should be the commander. If he dies, then this man. And if he dies, then Abdullah ibn Ruwaha. Okay, he gave a whole command structure. And in fact, in that battle, everyone died, which he mentioned. So then the people erected in the army the commander, which was Khalid bin Walid. Okay? So he had an army, which was a pillar of the state. He had a Majlis al-Shura. He had a council or consultative assembly. It is narrated in the books of Sira that he used to have 7 from the Ansar and 7 from the Muhajireen. And they mentioned their names. So he had a Majlis, meaning today, if you have a head of state, a ruler who rules by Islam, he must have a majlis who will ask them to advise. Not as a parliament where they vote about halal and haram, whether you legalize prostitution or not. Okay, in Islam there is no parliament in that sense. There is a consultation. Okay, because the legislation is already set by Allah and His Messenger. So he had these pillars of a state. So this is also from the Sunnah of the Messenger. Okay. In terms of the way that he performed that. Similarly, the way he fought wars. The way that the Prophet ﷺ fought a war. He used to, in an external, whether it was a defensive war or an offensive war. The Prophet ﷺ used to send letters to people and used to invite them to Islam first. If they do not accept, they should pay the jizya, the tax, to live under the Islamic rule. And if they do not, he used to fight them, not to kill them. Like today, they have their unjust wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to bombard the people, to kill the people. Who killed 650,000 people in Iraq. That is not what the Prophet fought for. The fighting in Islam is to remove the authority. Not to kill the people, to remove the... Because we believe that all the other authorities apart from the authorities of Islam, authority of Islam, is unjust. وَمَنْ لَمْ يَحْكُمْ بِمَا أَنْزَلَ اللَّهُ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ. Those who do not rule by whatever Allah has revealed, they are oppressors and tyrants and unjust people. So in Islam, the objective of war is to remove, okay, the obstacles to the implementation of the law of Allah and to make the word of Allah the highest. That is the meaning. We also take that from the Sunnah. So we understand in Islam, the Sunnah is a legislative source. Okay? And we must take it in the correct manner, the way that the Prophet ﷺ engaged in da'wah. Okay? So people today, they will say that yes, let us do da'wah like the Prophet ﷺ did da'wah. But they do not study how the Prophet ﷺ did da'wah. Did the Prophet ﷺ do da'wah? Because we know Allah Azza wa Jalla has obliged us, of course, in different ayahs, Udu ila sabili rabbika bil hikmati wal mu'idatul hasana, and so on. Call to the way of your Lord with hikmah and mu'idatul hasana, the magnetizing speech or the beautiful speech, and argue with them by what is best. Allah has ordered us with da'wah to call to Islam, but how do we call to it? Now, people will claim, yes, we should call to how the Prophet, in the same way as how the Prophet ﷺ did it. Yes, we should, because the da'wah is a fard, and therefore the way the Prophet ﷺ did da'wah repeatedly becomes a fard for us to emulate, isn't it? But did the Prophet ﷺ restrict his da'wah to ibadah, to morals, to only to believe in Allah in a secular way, meaning in a way which is detached from life. No. The Prophet ﷺ in Mecca, his da'wah was to the iman, of course, to the belief, against shirk, against the system of the time, the system of jahiliyyah, okay, against the economic system, against the political system, against the government, against everything. So he did not distrust in Mecca. Sometimes people give the impression that Prophet ﷺ was only talking about, oh brother, become a Muslim, and these are the nice morals, and this is how we should pray. In fact, prayer and the details will reveal later on. The Prophet did not do that. The Prophet ﷺ was challenging the Quraysh. He invited them, come, okay, and he used to challenge them. And Allah Azza wa Jalla challenged them in the Quran, and he used to recite them to their face. Tabbat yada Abi Lahab wa tab. Perish the hands and the power of Abu Lahab. When was that? That was not revealed in Medina, that was revealed in Mecca. And who was that again? Abu Lahab, who was the ruler of Medina. One of the main rulers, we know Abu Lahab, Abu Jahl, Abu Sufyan, Al-Walid ibn Mughira. These were the main chieftains, and Abu Talib, of course, was also one of the part of the leadership of the Quraysh. Okay? And the Prophet was condemning them in his prayer, in his recitation. It is narrated, Abu Bakr as-Siddiq used to go outside his house and he used to recite the Quran openly. And people used to make trouble for him in that. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, when he went out to recite the Quran in front of everyone openly to challenge, because why did they feel threat? If somebody goes in the middle of the road here in Tughlaqabad and starts reciting the Quran, nothing will happen to you. Okay, it is not about that. It is about what they were saying. What they were saying was challenging the system of the time. You understand that? The system was based on shirk and idolatry. And the whole system was corrupt. وَيْلُ الْمُتَفِّفِينَ. Don't cheat in the market. Don't bury your daughters alive. Okay? أَرَأَيْتَ الَّذِي يُكَذِّبُ بِالدِّينِ. Look at the one who turns away from the orphan. Talking about Abu Sufyan, who was in power, who was the ruler. So we must understand that even in the da'wah to Islam, we must emulate the actions of the message. This is also from the sunnah. We cannot neglect that. Da'wah does not mean we talk about morals and just how to go to the toilet and how to do this du'a and this du'a. Da'wah is greater than that. Okay? And the Prophet ﷺ, what was his mission in Mecca? What was his da'wah for? His da'wah was to establish Islam. Not just to make people Muslims. They are two different things. Establishing Islam and making people Muslim are two different things. He said, by Allah, when they came to compromise with him, they said, they went to Abu Talib, tell your nephew, we will give him everything. We will give him money. If he is ill, we will give him doctors. If he is, you know, in need of women, we will give him all the women. Just tell him to quieten down his message. Okay? And he said, by Allah, if you put the shams, the sun in my right hand, and the qabr, the moon in my left hand, I will not desist, I will not stop from this call until Allah establishes it. Or I die in the pursuit of that. Okay? So he was trying to establish the Islamic authority. The state of Islam, the government, the ruling of Islam. So this is also from the sunnah. So today when people talk about the sunnah, they give a very distorted image. The Prophet ﷺ, we know he was, لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنًا. Verily, in the Messenger of Allah is the best example. So, the Prophet ﷺ was the best husband. He said in a hadith, the best of you is the best to his wife, and I am the best to my wife. He was the best husband. He was the best father to be emulated. Okay? He was the best da'wah carrier. He was the best carrier of the call. He was the best ruler. He was the best commander in war. He was the best judge in the disputes of the people. Okay? He was the best friend because he was with his companion. So when we look at the Prophet ﷺ, do not become distorted in your view. We take one aspect. In ibadat, we follow him, and the rest of our life, we do not. So let us understand the sunnah in the proper way. And I will end with a hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. He said, in the famous hadith, I have left with you two things. If you were to hold on to them, you will never go astray. But unfortunately, in history, we have gone away from those things. He said, the book of Allah, the kitab of Allah, and my sunnah. أقول قولي هذا
السنة. Brothers, hope that you find the topic of sunnah very useful. for you. And if you have any question, raise feel free.
Raise your hand if you have any question. I know the subject, some aspects were somewhat detailed. You can ask if you are unclear about any matter. It is just that. Feel free, brother. Anything? Yes.
Amana, Actually, now, since I read hadith,
yes,
that in after some decades or some centuries,
yes,
okay, the Islamic knowledge
will
decrease.
Yes, yes.
So, people will be Muslim just by
by name.
I'm Muslim. What do you understand about Islam? Nothing, I don't know. Okay. Will now some of them, or you can see in some communities, most of them, okay, they are certified just by, they are Muslim,
yeah,
by the name. Okay. I'm Muslim. Okay. But it is not important to know about your Islam. It's not important. Okay. It's not important to get in God knowledge. Increase your knowledge. Just your Muslim. Here, for example, I used to attend some discussion,
yes,
debates about Islam. Those discussions were concentrated about
just Salah. That's
yeah, Islam is not only Salah.
I know. That is majority of
it. Islam is the way how to live, how to live, how to deal with others. This is Islam. Not Muslims, or you can say our enemies, our hostiles, want us to understand Islam as only Salah.
Yes.
So now, for example, this the issue of veil.
Yeah, that they are attacking us. Yes.
The current issue.
Yes.
Okay. Every day
we discussed this in last week. Yes.
Now girls are free, okay, to walk without clothes.
Yeah.
No one says why. No one says you are doing something like that. No. It's a freedom.
Yeah.
It's some personal matter. Okay. It's not that. If you said to a girl,
yes,
why are you snake? Huh? My personal matter. Very simple. Okay. Okay. And we agree with him. Now other girl, okay, won't look at the freedom.
Yes.
The freedom. No.
Problem.
Yeah. I won't see your face.
Exactly.
Okay.
This is the issue.
This is not a matter of Islam. I think that understanding Sunnah.
Yes.
Understanding Sunnah is a very good way to understand Islam.
Yes, of course.
Because understanding Quran without Sunnah is very, very difficult.
Yeah, no way, because the Sunnah has details, like
yeah,
the Aisha radiallahu
anha. And actually, those people who understand Islam as a Quran,
yes,
they are not sincere in this claim.
Yes.
They only want to escape from Islam.
That's right.
Okay, so Sunnah makes some restrictions, some obligations.
Yeah. The way of running away from the deen. If you permit me to make some comments now. Comprehensive.
We have to say that not just this part, and the final part. It is easy.
Okay, I say. No, but this is very difficult for me. No. We have to understand Islam as a whole. We have to take Islam as a whole. We have to deal with others according to Islam. Islam is not right. Okay, just some few comments on this to elaborate. What the brother said is 100% correct, that people today, of course, their knowledge of Islam, and the Prophet has predicted that. He has said in a hadith narrated in Bukhari that a time will come when the knowledge will decrease by the death of learned men, by the death of the people of knowledge. And at that time, okay, people will give fatawa, okay, they will give judgment, okay, like we see, unfortunately today, people, see, we have to understand what is the root for that. Many people today have a lack of knowledge and don't want to ask questions because they just follow, we will just follow our imam. Our imam said it's okay, Islam is salah, we don't need to worry about these other things. In the masjid, as an example, the Prophet ﷺ warned us about that. He said that people give fatwa from their mind. Okay, And you know, the Prophet ﷺ warned us that there was a grave thing. Also, in another hadith, as you mentioned, that the knowledge will decrease. He said that there will come a time when somebody will be a believer in the morning and a kafir in the evening, and a believer in the evening and kafir by the morning, and they will sell the deen for worldly goods. Okay, what is the meaning? How can you be a believer in the morning and a kafir by the evening, and believer that? Meaning what? This is the reality, unfortunately, among some people today, that even the issues of Iman, not even the issues of the following the Sharia, not even on Iman. Because, for example, some Muslims, I read every day in the Times of India and all these newspapers, some Muslim women and some Muslims say, oh, the khimar, the headscarf of a woman, no, it's not farz. Islam just says modesty. Islam, the Quran only says we should be modest. These are professors in the different universities. That is, to believe in that is kufr. If you believe in that, your iman has gone outside. You are not a Muslim anymore. You see the problem? Because it is a definitive rule. It is like saying, I don't believe in salah. Yes, the issue of the veil, i.e. the face covering, there is difference of opinion in the scholars. But the khimar, the obligation of the headscarf and the jilbab, the outer garment, these are definitive things, people. Do not differ on them. So, we have to understand, people even lose their iman like that. Yeah? So, the issue is today that knowledge is decreased, and the Prophet ﷺ told us, بَدَعُ الْإِسْلَامُ غَرِيبًا. When Islam came, it was something gharib, strange. It was something new, something different, something that people think, oh, what is this? وَسَيَوْدُهُ غَرِيبًا. And it will come back as something strange. فَأَتُبُوا لِلْغُرَبَىٰ. So, blessings to the stranger. So, what does this mean? This means today when we are talking to these people, they're saying, you're saying something strange. You're talking about Islam, that we should grow a way of life, we should wear this, we should... They see it strange, so this is a way that Islam will come back. Yes, the time of knowledge disappearing has come, but also the time of Islam coming back has come. That we have to revive the deen. We cannot just sit and say, yes, the situation is bad. You are right that the situation is bad, that people don't have an understanding of Islam, but we have to understand the causes for that. We have to work to establish Islam, and we have to work to propagate Islam in the society such that we build the Islamic concept. And in a comprehensive way, like for example in India, you take the example, they have secularized the deen, okay? Meaning what? They have separated deen and dunya altogether. So they say, what is deen? You ask somebody, what is deen? They will say, salah, sawm, hajj, zakah, and that's it. And they will even understand those things in a very limited way. Okay? Yeah, just like Christianity. You know, it's just a moral to be nice. Now, if you ask them, what about the way you buy and sell and trade and work and in jobs? Well, no, that's nothing good. What's that got to do with Islam? There's a problem. As we said here, that the sunnah is not only in salah, it is in all aspects of life, how we trade. The Prophet ﷺ was a trader also before. And how we trade, he told us the rules for trade, how we get married. Okay, how we deal with our parents, our children, each other in society, how we rule and govern, everything. So we need to portray the holistic picture of Islam. See, the people say, no, but the pillars of Islam, Bunya al-Islam al-Khamsa, the pillars of Islam are five. Yes, but the pillars without the building are useless. You understand? If you just have the five pillars of a building, of this building, only the pillars are there. Without the building, the pillars are useless, isn't it? The pillars are the foundation. On top of the pillars, there is a building, there is a house, there is a structure. So Islam is not only its pillars, those are the foundation. And even those pillars have been taken in the wrong way. For example, when we take the first pillar of Islam, the Shahada, how do people understand the Shahada? They understand it that there is no one to be worshipped except Allah. That is not true. La ilaha illallah does not only mean that there is no one to be worshipped in terms of the ritual worship. There is no ilah, meaning there is no God, no entity, no sovereign, no law, nothing. Okay? No God, nothing except Allah. So this means what? Meaning that we believe also that Allah is sovereign. He is Al-Hakim, the one who makes the rules and laws for us in all life. So it is very important sometimes with these brothers, because I have discussed with many of them that try to restrict Islam to Salah. And they say, brother, Islam is about Iman and Salah. I say, okay, let us start from Iman. We don't even want to discuss the systems. Let us start, how do you understand Iman? Is Iman only that Allah is Al-Khaliq, but not Al-Hakim? Okay? Allah Azza wa Jal, He has told us in the Quran so many times it's different attributes. You cannot take one attribute and leave the other attribute. Okay? إِنِ الْحُكْمُ إِلَّا لِلَّهِ يَقُصُّ الْحَقَّ وَهُوَ خَيْرُ الْفَاسِرِينَ Verily, Allah is the one who is sovereign. He is the rule is only for Allah. And He declares the truth and He is the best of judges. Yes. But you believe in some part of the book, reject other part. So we have to try and make them understand. It is our duty, you are right, to make them understand that Islam is a complete deen, covering all aspects of life and covering what's happening in the world today. What's happening in the world today, like the Prophet ﷺ said, that if you do not enjoin the good and forbid the evil, you do not, you know, work for amal ma'ruf and nahi al-munkar, enjoining the goodness, meaning what is from Islam, and turning away and telling people to turn away from what is evil, what is munkar, then Allah will send calamity upon calamity upon you. And you will raise your hands in dua, but He will not answer your prayer. So we have to appreciate that. Yes, brothers, any other question they have?
As an elder concern, and he's the imam of the whole ummah in Jamia.
Right.
He's a person who is in charge of day-to-day viewing of the attitude of ummah.
Yes.
So maybe the points you have given are one of the sorts of the points he has been observing within and outside the company. So I think for you, it's going to be the point of you to be discussed day by day, inshallah, whenever you have time. And my question is that regarding the first verse of the Quran, that the first verse of you have mentioned that
yes.
And there is also hadith that Prophet said, is it all that Prophet has obligated for us that it is the it is on the amount that we almost have to follow them. All these hadiths will restrict some of the work of
exactly. These ayat and those ahadith, like the Prophet said, كُلُّ أَمَلٍ لَيْسَ عَلَيْهِ أَمْرُنَا فَغَرَدْ. Anyone does an action not in a good or a good is rejected. Now, these ahadith and ayat, they are establishing the sunnah as a source of sharia. That the Prophet, we must follow him as a source. But to get the ahkam, we must look at the hukum. Is it fard? Is it mandub? Is it makruh? Is it mubah? Is it haram? This is the point. So we should not take a misunderstanding when it's take whatever the messenger wrote to you. It doesn't mean if the Prophet wrote on a camel, we have to ride on a camel. That's how people get misunderstanding. So they say, look, it says, وَمَا أَتَاكُمْ take whatever the messenger. It means take the ahkam, the revelation. Because we have to take those ayah together with the correct meaning. The Prophet himself said to us, you know better in your affairs over your dunya, as an example. He told them, do not follow me if you know in the technological things, you can follow your own understanding. So the issue is that the scholars unanimously generally agree that the sunnah, these ayat and hadith establish the sunnah as a source of sharia. We must emulate the Prophet ﷺ in the correct hukam. It is still a source. So if the Prophet ﷺ is riding on a camel, it's still a dalil for us, but it's a dalil of ibaha, of permissibility. Not of recommendation or of obligation. We need another evidence to raise it to that. It's still a dalil. So it doesn't mean it's not from the wahi. It is still from the wahi, but what the wahi, even in the Quran, you have fard, you have haram, you have makruh. Even in the Quran, Allah said, when you go to hajj, after hajj, go hunting. Now, here it's not saying it is fard to go for hunting. It is saying it is permissible now. After hajj, you can go to hunt. So it is ibadah permissibility. So this is what we must understand. The people today follow Islam in general terms and talk about, even our brothers who talk about Salah, they talk about following the Sunnah in general terms, not following the Ahkam. This is a big problem. For example, my wife recently, she was invited to these gatherings where they talk about Salah all day and night, right? In those gatherings, the women who were giving the halakha, the women who were giving the whatever, the dars, whatever they were reading, my wife saw them afterwards, they were going outside the house at night without the khimar. Wearing dubatta, what do you mean in Indian customs? Just like Benazir Bhutto used to wear, you know, the scarf and tibia. My wife said to them, what is this? They are trying to teach Islam, but they don't know the ahkam, but they say, we must follow the sunnah, we must follow our Islam. Exactly. They do not know, they do not know the sharia rules. They follow Islam is morality, be good to your neighbor, be nice, be merciful. as general things, not in a detailed way. So we must follow every, in Islam there is a principle, every action requires a hukam, and every hukam requires a dalil. So any action you want to do, the Prophet ﷺ said in the famous hadith, Al-halalu bayin wal-haramu bayin. The halal is clear and the haram is clear. In between them it is mutashabihat. Mutashabihat, a rough translation of that, means grey areas. The unknown areas, things which are unknown. Things which are not clear. Then the Prophet ﷺ, if you read the hadith carefully, the Prophet ﷺ said, some people are aware about them. Some people are aware about them. Okay? And then he continued, but if you were to fall into them, you have committed haram. And every king has a hima, has a protected area. And the hima of Allah is his prohibition. So here the hadith, let us understand it more deeply. The hadith has different meanings in different contexts, but the, one of the main meanings is that the halal is clear, the haram is clear. There are some areas where you're not sure about. But the hadith says some people are aware of them. Meaning what? That if you do not know about the hukam, you are not sure, then do not do something because you will commit haram by doing that. You understand? If you are not sure, if you are about to engage in a contract, okay, and you are not sure if it's halal or not. Like for example, you are about to work in a shop, but in the shop you have to put, you have to deal with haram meat. Okay? You are not sure. Then for you to do it, you have committed haram. You must find out from the people who know, because the Prophet said some people are aware, meaning the ulama, the people of knowledge. You ask them, like Allah said, ask those who if you do not know, ask. So we must ask to find out the hukam. So in Islam, our entire lives must be governed by the Sharia. Whether it is personal, social, economic, political, everything. I'll give you a simple example. Today people are not conscious about many things. Like, in India it's a very common thing, you have a servant to come and clean the house. Okay? And normally those servants are women. So in Islam, the Prophet ﷺ said, if two of you are alone, the third is shaitan. About the woman who is not mahram, who is not your wife. So for example, I have seen it many sometimes in brother's house, I go there, and there is a cleaner and he is alone in the house. So we have to, you know, mention it to them and explain to them that it's not allowed. When that happens, you should maybe go outside the house or pull some, you understand this? People are not conscious of the Sharia. So we have to be conscious of the rules of Sharia. Otherwise, how can we ever attain Jannah?
And some other people are thinking it's difficult that as a part of the whole of Rasulullah as it is derived from the Holy Quran, that
we
know the whole Quran. Some people are thinking difficult that fixing water and other food spending is not a good manner. And you have made mention that Prophet Muhammad has taken water while standing. Is there any hadith for that?
Yes, yes. Of course, there is hadith which is authentic about that. See, we have to understand this is the reason why people look at the Sharia in general terms, not in what is the hukam of the Sharia. The scholars have not said drinking water standing is haram. Some have said it is makruh because the Prophet, they extract that. He recommended sitting down and drinking it, etc. So there is difference of opinion in that point. But he has not made it prohibited. So some people, they look at Islam in very general terms. So they, even this ayah, they misquote it. The ayah said he is best in akhlaq. But akhlaq is not the whole of Islam. In fact, the books of fiqh, the books of jurisprudence, they will have very detailed rules about economics and contracts, and about the rules of marriage and divorce, and the rules of government, and the rules of foreign policy and war. But they do not have, if you look at the books of fiqh, they do not have a detailed book or rules of akhlaq. Akhlaq are general characteristics which are good to be, to have. It is a personal thing. So akhlaq is only one aspect of the Sharia, not the whole of the Sharia. He is the best in akhlaq and he is uswatun hasana in all other aspects. People take akhlaq, so what they do, they are very careful in being very nice, very moral, but at the same time they have riba. You see the problem? Yes, you can leave, no problem. So can you see there is a contradiction? They take Islam and akhlaq. Islam is not akhlaq. Akhlaq is one aspect of Islam. You could be the most moral, I will tell you now. You can be the most moral of people, meaning you are the most nicest, you are the most merciful, you are the most forgiving, you are the best in your individual morality. But if you engage in riba, all of your deeds are deleted. Okay? The Prophet ﷺ has said, narrated in Mishkat al-Masabih, the one who engages in riba, it has 70 grades of sins. The least of which, you understand, the riba, meaning usury, meaning taking a loan or interest or giving a loan or interest. The least of which, there's 70 grades of sin, the least of which, and he talks about the one who takes one dirham in riba, one dirham, dirham is an amount of gold, a small amount, not so much. One dirham of riba, 70 grades, the least of which is worse than having intercourse with your mother in the precincts of the Kaaba. This is the hadith in Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. You see the point now? It is a kabira sin, it is one of the great sins in Islam. Allah said, He declares a war. Allah and His Messenger have declared war against those who engage in riba. It is narrated in hadith, on Yawm al-Qiyamah, the people who engage in riba, they will be given swords by the malaika. They will be given swords. And because Allah said, He has declared war on them. And they will take the swords and slit their own throats. Okay? You see the point here. Islam is not only akhlaq. Islam is mu'amala. Let us categorize Islam. Islam has different categorization in the rules. The ibadat. The ibadat are the direct relationship with Allah. Like the salah, the song, da'wah, jihad. All of these are from the ibadat rules. Okay? The rules which you do only as a direct worship to Allah. There is no other benefit in them. There is no other thing that you gain in them. Okay? There is no other result you are seeking. That is ibadah. Then there is the mu'amalat. The mu'amalat and the ukubat, the punishments. The transactions and the punishments. In the mu'amalat, you are allowed to seek benefits for yourself. But you have to do according to the Sharia rules. For example, in marriage. Of course, marriage will benefit you. You will have, you know, relations with your wife. In trade, you're going to earn money. But they must be in line with the Sharia. But they're different to the ibadah. In ibadah, you cannot pray to earn money. That is haram. But you can have a business to earn money. That is okay. So there is the mu'amala. The ukubat. Ukubat are punishment. The punishment rules. If somebody steals, cut off their hand. If they steal over the amount which is prescribed, etc. Then there is the ukubat, the foodstuffs, and the clothing. And like men cannot wear silk, they cannot wear gold, etc. Women, they have to cover everything apart from the face and the hands, etc. Then, the akhlaq. What people have done, they have made akhlaq and put that as the biggest thing, and that is the only thing they call for. That destroys the nature of Islam, whoever does that. To call for akhlaq alone in society is haram. You have to call for akhlaq together with all the other rules. Yeah? We have to be very careful. Alaykum as-salam.
The question is less about what is going on in Pakistan.
Yes.
The
about the race.
Yes.
Yes.
Now the Pakistan Parliamentary is in trouble. Yeah.
Yes.
About the majority that is pro Mushara.
Yes. Yes.
Said that we should abandon the objective to
yes.
To which the active the victim wants to see
four witnesses.
Four witnesses. Standard evidence.
Yeah.
If she didn't, she must be dead. They say we should leave that of this law.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that I have been following that.
Now, what they say is Shokat and this person has said,
Prime Minister.
Yeah, Prime Minister. We should abandon that of this law because we need to give cover to the person.
Yeah.
Now the accused must undergo DNA. If they are proved to be guilty, they will be punished. What do you think?
Okay. We have to understand, first of all, Pakistan, like every other single government in the Muslim world today, does not rule by Islam and the government does not care about Islam. Okay? We know they betrayed the Muslims of Afghanistan, they're providing air bases for the Americans and you know everything for the Americans to kill the Muslims of Afghanistan, which is not halal. So, what they don't care about Sharia, but they care about public opinion. Okay? So, like in Pakistan, like in Saudi, like in Sudan, like in Nigeria, you have some parts of the Sharia implemented. But even then, we have to understand something. Look, if the basis of the system is not Islam, then you will have some, like, let me give you an example. Can you have a car without an engine? You have the steering wheel, you have the gearbox. You have the exhaust pipe, but no engine. They call him a driver. Meaning the system, if the system of Islam is not complete, the system will not work. Okay? You will find that you will be messed up. So that is the reality in all these countries today. That the system is not Islamic. That is what they are referring to the verse you quoted. أَفَتُؤْمِنُونَ بِبَعْدَ الْكِتَابِ وَتَكْفُرُونَ بِبَعْدَ. Do you take some part of the book, the kitab, and reject other parts? This is what they are doing. So let us look. In Pakistan, already the existing so-called hudud laws are not the full implementation of the Islamic punishment and judicial system anyway. That is why there is a problem. Let me explain to you. Even in Saudi Arabia, do you think they implement the Islamic punishment system equally and properly? No. In Saudi Arabia, if the royal family or if the army steal, their hand is not cut. The Prophet said, if Fatima stole, I would cut her hand. You don't do that. There is no bias in that. Let us look in Pakistan. Let us take the example of rape. In Islam, see, unfortunately, because the people who are in the power there, even the so-called Islamic parties, most of them, they have very limited understanding of the Islamic legislation in these areas. Let us look. Rape is different to zina. The ahkam of rape are different to the ahkam of zina. Zina is consensual. The man and the woman together consenting with each other have intercourse. In that, you must have four witnesses. Okay? And if you accuse somebody of zina and if you do not bring four witnesses, you are lashed. That is the Islamic rule. Because zina is something consensual. Okay? And that it comes under hudud law. If somebody is married and they commit zina, then they are killed. If they are not married, then they are lashed. Okay? Now, the case of rape is not zina in the normal sense. It is different. It is the forced intercourse. So it does not come under hudud, it comes under ta'zir. Okay? In Islam, hudud means those punishments specified by Allah, the evidences are specified by Allah, and the punishments are specified by Allah, and we cannot change that, we have no choices. The ta'zir is those laws which are sinful actions which Allah has left it to the Khalifa, the head of state, to determine the punishment. So, rape does not fall under the noble issue of zina because it's different. It falls under ta'zir. So, if it is proved with four witnesses, of course, if it is proved with four witnesses, then the man will be punished by the action of the woman. But in zina, the man and the woman are punished. You see the issue? So, it is different. Also, if the woman, now, what they are implementing in Pakistan is not according to the Sharia anyway. So there is a need for the change of the law to implement the Sharia, not to implement what Shaukat Aziz is saying. What Shaukat Aziz and what Musharraf are saying, even Musharraf has openly said that, they are saying, no, we should not abandon those outdated laws, we should implement the modern laws from the West. That's what they're talking about, civil laws. We should abandon the Hudud and implement the laws. That is kufr. Basically, to believe in that is disbelief from Islam. Okay? That you cannot implement a law from man, from the mind, from the West, from philosophers, from the kuffar, from parliament, majority. Islam does not decide those things. Islam has already set the law. So, in rape, what is the law in Islam? In rape, if the woman is raped, forcibly of course, then the case must be studied. If there is evidence, like DNA evidence, and circumstantial evidence, in ta'zir law, not in the hudud, because first we have to classify where is the case. In ta'zir law, four witnesses are not required. In ta'zir law, one witness is enough. In ta'zir law, even circumstantial evidence can be taken, like DNA, like all of those other things. So, but the punishment will be less. Okay? So, if there is evidence from DNA, for example, and a doctor has verified that she has been raped, and so on, or if there is one witness for less than four, the woman, of course, is not punished. She is not punished at all. She is not accusing without evidence. She has got certain evidences. The judge will look at that. And the man will be punished by imprisonment and lashing, not by killing. Yeah? There is a great scholar, his name is Abdul Rahman al-Maliki. He has written a book called Nizam al-Uqubat in Islam, the punishment system in Islam. And he's discussed all the different details of that, and in there he discusses the rules of rape, and he discusses that, and he says this is the punishment. Nizam al-Uqubat, the punishment system. I have got it in a draft translation in English from that. which is a draft of Liberty, is written in Arabic. Yes, the scholar is the Muslim one. It's a very good book. Yes, I can give you the Arabic version of that. If you want all the translation in English of that, it is very good. Yes. Yes. No problem. Yes, yes. Right, okay. We must understand there is a difference between saving your money in a bank and directly engaging in riba. There are two different things. Okay? That in Islam it is permitted to save your money with someone. Now, in a bank, you're saving your money there. Are you liable by the Sharia whether they are doing something with that money or so on? No, you're not liable if they are non-Muslim. Okay? You are liable for your contract with them or your saving with them. You cannot accept riba and you cannot pay riba. Or you cannot witness the action of riba and be a testament to that and sign for that. The Prophet ﷺ said, the one who gives, the one who takes, the one who signs, the meaning the one who writes, the one who witnesses, all of them are guilty. So in Islam, it is permitted to save money in a bank. I have a bank account. But you must tell them first to take, not to give you riba. Okay? So I requested in my bank, I don't want any interest. So they remove the interest. Now some banks do not accept that. They will just have it, like in India, there's some old laws, so they don't allow you to remove the riba. They will just give you riba as an increment. Okay? But what you must do then is not touch that money. You leave that money in there because it's not yours. You cannot use it. So if you have like let's say 10,000 rupees and the rate of riba is let's say 3%, then it would increase, or 6%, it would increase by that percentage. But you don't take the increase, you only take the original. So that is fine. That is not haram, because taking and giving is haram, but not saving in a legitimate way. Yes?
But they are referring that such money yours, and you are leaving the money.
Yes, in Islamic law, we don't look at the consequences of actions like that. We don't look at logic. Let me give you the same logic in the Prophet's time. The Prophet in Mecca was buying and selling from the Quraysh. They could have used that money to fight him, but he was still trading with them. So Islamic law is not based on mantic logic. It is based upon what is the hukam of Allah on that issue. For example, Ali radiallahu anhu, he said, if the Islamic law was logical, i.e. if it was based on the mind, would make the matah under the socks, not over the socks. You understand? Matah, when you make wudu over the socks, okay, when it's cold, for example, you can wear socks, make matah over that. You don't need to take off your socks, and that will be enough for wudu. The Ali said, if Islam was about logic, then you would make matah under the socks, because of course under the socks will be dirty.
Yeah.
Not over, but Islam has said it is over. So the Islamic ahkam, we do not use logic in that. We just look simply, what is the hukum of Allah? So in the issue of, for example, the kuffar, we are not liable for what they do. They have agreed to store our money, and when we want to take the money out, we can take it at any time.
Fine.
We are liable for that. Okay, Umar radiallahu anhu, for example, the kuffar, they sold the meat of pig and they paid the jizya. Okay, and he accepted the jizya from them. So the kuffar, we are not liable in all those things with them. With Muslims, we are. So we cannot save our money if the bank is 100%, or if the bank is, if we know it's owned by Muslims. So in the Muslim countries, you should be careful. So you should store your money in a foreign bank, which is non-Muslim. If it is Muslim, because the whole institution of the bank is prohibited. So Islam does not recognize it as a legal entity. But with a non-Muslim, we are not liable. So we, even though it is not according to Islamic law legal, but in Islamic rules, we treat them as if they are legal. Okay? That is how the Prophet ﷺ and the companions have taught us.
So even if you think of taking that money to give it away,
No, it is not allowed. There are some scholars who try to say that, but it is not permitted. Why? I will explain why. There are some scholars who say, yes, you can give the money from riba to the build the toilet or to the sadaqah, something like that. It is not allowed. Why? Because it contradicts the entire concept of ownership in Islam. In origin, we know so many ayat and hadith have verified that Allah is the owner in origin. Allah owns everything. So there is the first principle of economics in Islam is all wealth belongs to Allah. We are only allowed to own wealth when He has consented for that. For example, if I steal your pen or if I steal your watch,
okay,
that watch is not mine. Allah has not consented for the transfer of ownership. And therefore, I do not own it, even though I possess it. So there is a difference between possession and ownership. I may physically possess it. If I have stolen this from a brother, I may physically possess it, but I do not own it. Therefore, I cannot use it. I cannot drink from it. I cannot sell it. I cannot do anything with it. I cannot give it to Salafah. It is not mine. The only thing I can do is give it back. Right? So same thing with any illegal earning, whether it is from bribery, whether it is from riba, the only thing you can do is give it back. It is not your money at all. Okay? So you can leave it in the bank if they don't want to take it, or you can take it out and give it back to them. As an example, if they accept that, or you can just tell them to cut it out. So these are the options. We cannot use it because it is not ours. In the first place, Allah has not allowed us to possess it. Therefore, we cannot use it, we cannot give it to Sadaqa, none of that has any meaning. Yes.
One of my questions is that in the Holy Quran, Allah Ta'ala had mentioned that during the time that Prophet Luqman was advising his son that Wala Shubhidit, Wala Shubhidit. And among the advice, he said, Wala Tufa'il Khabir, Wala Tufa'il Abdi Maraha. What does that supposed to mean? Because we have already mentioned that Prophet Sallallahu used to walk very fast.
Do not walk with pride upon the earth. Okay? We can translate it roughly as that, yes? Do not walk in the translations of the Quran in a haughty manner or in a proud manner upon the earth. Yes? Now, that is true. And then what translation is that?
You should be limiting you, the way you walk.
Limiting? Yeah. What do you mean?
50 mashika of the new sorting.
Yes.
It means what I was trying to understand is not like you shouldn't be walking very fast like that.
No, I think we have to look at from what I have seen in the books of Tafsir about that, is they say do not walk with arrogance. And you know the arrogant man, he's the one who runs around at the end. I am the one, it's an expression in the language, okay? I am the boss, you understand? With, you know, it's like that. You should walk humbly, okay? Yeah. With humbleness, not with arrogance and pride. So that is the meaning here. It doesn't mean in terms of fast or slow, it means arrogant or with humbleness. So yes, in Islam, we are mentioned, it is mentioned in other texts also to walk, we should be humble in general. We should not be proud. Only in certain examples we are allowed. So there is one of the companions, his name is Abu Dujana radiallahu anhu. Yeah? Abu Dujana, he is known as the red banded warrior. In one of the battles, okay, he was showing off, like as if it is from pride in front of the kuffar. He was taking his sword and doing all this maneuver like somebody is doing martial arts like that, right? He was showing off. And the Prophet looked at him and said, Allah does not like this type of action except in this circumstance. Okay? So meaning in war, then we are obliged, okay, to like to show fierceness and yes, I'm the like the master like that, right? We have to show that because we want to make them fierce. So in war it is something. But in general, we should not be like that. In general we are humble, we don't try and show we are proud, we know everything. Yes, so this is the meaning from what I've read. We can check the books of Tafsir, what it means.
And another hadith you brought that Prophet said, Sallu kama ra'aytumuni usalli.
Yes.
You should pray as the way you can pray.
Yes.
So what happens to the people who are now Shia? They are following Shia. They are saying there is no limit between the Zuhr and Asr.
Yes.
And there is no, the limit between Maghrib and Isha doesn't count. You can pray at any, just within, even 5 minutes interval, you can just pray.
Not only the Shia,
and maybe even the Sunni scholars say that.
No, it is not only the Shia who say that. It is only even the Sunni scholars say that, like Shafi, that you can pray. Your prayer is valid until the next prayer, but there is a recommended time of prayer. Okay, so the recommended time of prayer is, for example, at Maghrib time. The recommended time is just after the sunset. Okay. That is the recommended time. Now, you can pray until the beginning of Isha time, Maghrib. Your prayer is valid. If you pray even according to the Sunni madhahib, some like Abu Hanifa say it is makruh. Some scholars say it is makruh. It is disliked to delay the prayer. But you can pray, it is valid until the end of the beginning of the prayer. However, it is valid. Now, the Shia, the problem with them in their thinking is that they have a problem in accepting the Sunnah of the Prophet alone. They say the Sunnah is of the infallible. The Sunnah is not only of the Prophet ﷺ, the Sunnah is of all the 12 Imams. Okay? So this is the what we know as the Isna Ashari Shia, the people who believe in the 12 Imams. So they will quote the statement of Ja'far al-Sadiq, or Muhammad al-Baqir, or Hassan, and Hadith. They will say Ja'far al-Sadiq said that it is Dalil. For us, Ja'far al-Sadiq is a great scholar, he was a teacher of Abu Hanifa, but his statement is not a Dalil. His statement is his opinion. It is not like the Hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. The Prophet ﷺ was ma'akum. He is infallible, he could not make sin. But they believe that all the 12 Imams, their 12 Imams are infallible. This is a sin. They have committed sin by that. Yeah? They are not disbelievers, but they are sinful for that. Okay? They are like, within, we have to understand, within the Sunni and the Shia, they are deviant. Within both sides. There are some amongst the so-called Sunnis who go into Kufr, they are Kuffar. Some amongst the Shia who are Kuffar. There are some amongst the Sunnis who go into Bid'ah, innovation, they are sinful. There are some amongst the Shia who go into Bid'ah, innovation, they are sinful. There are some amongst the Sunnis who are good, there are some amongst the Shia who are good. So let us classify, right? Within the Sunnis, for example, those people who believe that, like Fuqat Aziz, maybe he's Sunni, and he says, yes, this Islamic law is backwards. Then that is, you become Catholic like that.
Yeah.
Then you go outside of Islam. Similarly, there are those people within the Shia who go out and say Ali is God or Ali is the Prophet, something like that. They go into Kufr. Or in India, there was a Sunni man, so-called Sunni, Ghulam Ahmad Mirza Qadian, who formed his own deen, you know, Qadianism. They have a big mosque somewhere near here. Or near temple, Batra. Sorry, you call it temple, not mosque.
Near Batra.
Near Batra Hospital. Mm-hmm. So they are from the Sunni, not from the Shia. Okay? So they are both, they are amongst them kuffar. Then they are amongst them the sinful, bid'ah people. Amongst the Sunnis, if you go to Nizamuddin, you go deep into Nizamuddin, to the dargah, what they call, you will see people making tawaf around the grave, going all of that, bowing to the grave, doing, jumping up and down, doing all sorts of things. These people are engaged in bid'ah, so they are Muslim, but they are sinful. Similarly, amongst the Shia, you go to the grave of Imam al-Hadi or someone, they do the same thing. They are doing all the things. They are people of bid'ah. Some people in the Sunni, they will say, my scholar, he is a peer. A peer means, he is like infallible. He gets wahi from Allah. Not directly, they will not say wali wahi. Ilham, he gets inspiration. He had a dream and every dream he has is true and everything is true, whatever he says. And he told me this and he told me that and it's true. Even if it contradicts the Sharia sometimes. So these are the people of bid'ah. Similarly in the Shia, they have this thing. So, amongst those, we should not discriminate and say only the Shia, all of them are wrong. Amongst them, then within the Shia, you have people like the Zaydis. The Zaydis are very good. The Zaydis are the same as we sometimes call them the fifth madhab of the Sunnis. Or the sixth, like after the Zahiris. The Zaydis are like Imam al-Shawkani. He was Zaydi. They don't believe in infallibility. They say no, the infallibility is not there. It's only for the Prophet. They don't accept the infallibility. They accept the same as what we accept. The only difference they have is they say, in their personal opinion, but they do not criticize the Sahaba or anything. They say it would have been better if Ali was the Khalifa after the Prophet. But there is nothing else they say. They accept Abu Bakr and Umar and Uthman and everyone, they have no problem. Yeah? So, we must be correct when we talk about the Shia. We should not discriminate totally against them.
So all of like Shawkani and all of the people on that,
yeah,
they fall all under the agreement that you can pray without limit. No,
we have to look at the books of fiqh. Yani, as I said already, even the Sunni Imams accept that you can pray, but it is makruh. Maybe the Shia say it is not makruh. I don't know. I have to look at what they say, how they justify that. Yeah, but we have to look at their books of fiqh. Like Shawkani is a great scholar. People refer to him, and he. When they made ijtihad, he was a mujtahid, he made ijtihad based upon dalil. He would not just invent something. He was very strict in his evidences, and his books are known and some of the master works like Nehru Autar is a very famous work of his, or Irshad al-Fuhul, which is a Sufi. He has written in detail, and everyone accepts him, all the Sufi scholars accept him. Yeah? Yes. Maybe we will end is 7:30?
7:30.
Okay, we have a few minutes if anyone has. Yes.
About
the issue of legs and shoulders, what is the issue? See, the issue is, yani, there is ikhtilaf in some areas of salah. Not only going of legs and shoulders, there is ikhtilaf in the style of prayer itself, because there are differing narrations of how the Prophet prays. There is a narration that the Prophet ﷺ prayed like this, there is a narration that the Prophet ﷺ prayed like this. They are both authentic. Now, which one outweighs the other? This is why the scholars have debated, okay, on this matter. So some say it is mubah to pray like this, but it is mandub, recommended to pray like this. You see the issue, so there is debate amongst them. So like similarly, within the going of the, generally the three schools of thought, or most of the schools of thought, they accept that. Abu Hanifa says the joining of the shoulders but not the joining of the feet. Yeah? And he or have some evidence for that. So, you know, there is differences on these types of evidences. So we have to, whatever view we follow, we should be from Dalil, and he should be from somebody who is accepted as a Muslim, as a Jewish, who has derived that. So you can follow Imam Malik or Abu Hanifa or Shafi, or any other scholar, even somebody who is a Muslim today, you can follow if he has his own opinion, as long as it's based on evidence, and as long as it's expected. We accept all of them as valid opinions. The strongest evidence, strongest opinion I follow personally is that it should be both, because it is from a narration that the joining of the shoulders and the feet. Yeah? So we should not say those who do not do that, they are committing.